from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's interesting to reflect on the fate of different stories that are floating around right now. Last week, there was a story that made it through the bubble into some of the American press that Saddam Hussein's government, in the weeks before war, had made repeated high-level approaches to the United States government, saying, whatever you want, babe, basically. Saying, you can send hundreds of FBI people into Iraq to look for weapons of mass destruction. We'll have elections within 2 years, if that's what you want. We'll support you on Israel, if that's what you want. And according to these reports, these approaches were met, at least in the voice of Richard Perle. There he is again. Richard, I was found innocent this week of any ethical lapses in representing defense contractors while working on the Defense Policy Board. Perle, these approaches were met by Richard Perle with the line, the CIA says we'll see you in Baghdad, unquote. So that story had a little run, didn't really catch on, didn't really get traction, as they say, even though, if true, it would seem to put the skids under the insistence by the United States government that war was our last resort. By the same token, over this past weekend, a story appeared almost suggesting the reverse. It appeared in the Weekly Standard, of all places, a conservative weekly magazine funded and owned, and as far as we know, controlled by Rupert Murdoch. A leak of a memo written to the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Pat Roberts, Republican, by Douglas Feith. Looks like Feith, but it's Feith with an F. With an F at the beginning and a TH at the end, for those of you who aren't sitting close enough to the speakers. Feith, Undersecretary of Defense, part of the neocon clan, laying out more than a dozen pieces of intelligence that purport to show a connection from 1991 all the way to the current century between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Well, it's explosive stuff. If the headlines were true, and if it's that explosive, the first question you have to ask is, why is it leaked to the weekly, to an obscure, relatively obscure, conservative weekly magazine? Why wasn't it leaked to major newspaper, television, Fox News Channel? Well, Saturday night, Fox News Channel is leading with the story, kind of whipping it up, until they bring on their own military analyst, who says, there's nothing new here. Doesn't prove anything. No smoking gun. And the anchor tries a couple times. But. And no smoking gun. So that you have to give credit to the Fox News Channel. They blew their own scoop, which is very painful to do in most situations. Now, on the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, CNN. What is wrong with CNN? They're losing in the ratings race to Fox. And one of the stories they're big on is the Lacey Peterson story. And you may ask yourself, why am I supposed to care about Scott and Lacey Peterson? And here's my theory. Despite all the braying about the liberal media, this is a story that came on the national news agenda because it involves the murder of a pregnant mother. And the anti-abortionists would love this story to eventuate in a law that makes it murder to kill the fetus inside a pregnant mother. You know where that goes. That's my theory as to why this story is on the national news agenda. However, no theory explains the following. Wolf Blitzer was on the air this week, and because the CNN is co-owned by Time Magazine, Time Inc., Time Life, formerly Time Warner, formerly AOL Time Warner. Hey, would you like to buy AOL, by the way? Wolf was interviewing an editor at People Magazine who had written a story about the Lacey Peterson case. Wolf's question, what's the most, for those of you not following the case, Amber Fry is Scott Peterson's mistress. Scott Peterson alleged to have killed Lacey, his pregnant wife. Amber Fry, the other woman. Wolf Blitzer's question to the People Magazine editor, what's the most shocking thing you learned about Amber Fry in researching your article? Answer? The most surprising thing I learned, Wolf, is that she's just a normal girl. Wolf Blitzer has drunk the Kool-Aid. Hello, welcome to the show.
Trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julia, swear it's so hard to bear it, and I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. Hours on the phone making pointless calls. I got a desk full of paper that means nothing at all. Sometimes I catch myself staring into space, counting down the hours till I get to see your face. Hey, Julie, look what they're doing to me, trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julie, I swear it's so hard to bear it, and I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. How did it come to be that you and I must be far away from each other every day? Why must I spend my time filling up my mind with facts and figures that never add up anyway? They never add up anyway. Working all day for a mean little guy with a bad toupee and a soup stain tie. He's got me running around the office like a gerbil on a wheel. He can tell me what to do, but he can't tell me what to feel. Hey, Julie, look what they're doing to me, trying to trip me up, trying to wear me down. Julie, I swear it's so hard to bear it, and I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around. No, I'd never make it through without you around.
They'll come to my house and knock upon the door. Somebody gonna tell you, baby, not to ever come back no more. I said, I know, I think I know. Baby, how you classify that? It ain't no lie. Well, I'm so glad something told me. Baby, how you classify that? It ain't no lie. Some say I'm crazy, some say that I'm dumb. It doesn't mean that I don't know where I'm coming from. Don't call me crazy, don't you dare try to call me all out of my name. If you had my feelings, well, I'm sure you'd feel the same. It's real, what my mind keeps telling me. I know it's real, but there's one thing that you see. And I said, I know, yeah, I know. Baby, how you classify? Well, it ain't no lie. Well, I'm so glad that I know now. Baby, how you classify? Well, it ain't no lie. And I said, I know, said, I know, I know. Baby, how you classify? Well, it ain't no lie. You know, I said on a Monday, how you classify? Yeah, I said on a Wednesday, how you classify? You know, say on Tuesday, that ain't no lie. Well, I know Sunday, how you classify?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to Le Show. And before we do anything else, because I've been experiencing so much airport security myself, it's time for a tale of airport security. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And when I say that, of course, I am lying. That's full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen. But it's a lie, I think, that serves no purpose at all. That's why I keep doing it. Those are the best, don't you think? Dear Harry, this from my Denver to Sacramento flight on November 6th. I boarded the plane and was in a bulkhead seat across from the main entrance to the plane. When the plane was about one-third loaded, the gate agent came down and said that a package had been left in the boarding area. He announced to the one-third full flight that anyone who forgot a package should come to the entrance. There was no response. He and the flight attendants had a moment of uncertainty. Then he decided to leave the package in the galley because, quote, someone will eventually remember and want their package. That's how I believe is how the gate agent put it. The plane eventually loaded and the flight attendants were preparing to arm doors. The man sitting in the seat next to me asked the closest flight attendant if anyone had claimed the package. The flight attendant said, "What package?" Man in seat, "The package that the gate agent left in the galley." Flight attendant, "Oh, that one? No, no one claimed it." She walked off, unconcerned. The man and I exchanged glances in disbelief. Then the gate agent returned to close the door. Man next to me, "What are you going to do with that package?" Gate agent, "What package?" Man, "The one that you left in the galley." Gate agent, "Oh, that's right, let's see. Well, eventually someone's going to remember, so it's probably best that it's on the plane with them." Man, "I feel a lot safer if you took it off the plane." Blank stare from gate agent. Man, "Take the package off the plane!" The gate agent complied. I should copyright the Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen. Always fun to compare notes, isn't it? Now, ladies and gentlemen, some stories from beyond the bubble. This is from a conservative, pro-war British newspaper. At Buckingham Palace, there's bewilderment and some resentment at the sheer scale of American security requests for the duration of President Bush's stay, making a state visit to England this coming week. The palace knows how to do state visits, but there's never been quite one like this before. They wanted blast and bulletproofed windows, one senior courtier told the Telegraph newspaper. They wanted strengthened curtains and strengthening to the walls of the president's suite and the other rooms that he would be spending time in during his two-day stay. The proposal, which would have meant substantial building alterations to Buckingham Palace, was firmly turned down by the Queen, but anxiety levels among the Bush security team continue to grow. Buckingham Palace security pass holders are being ordered to go through bomb checks for the first time. Some palace staff who've had security clearance for 30 years are undergoing checking again. "The Queen will not have to wear a security badge. I think we know what she looks like," said one palace official. "But it is getting to that level. It is quite ridiculous," said another courtier. "The president's men seem obsessed with the idea of an airborne attack on the palace. Her Majesty takes the view that no amount of strengthening of windows and walls could protect the president in such eventualities. Other political leaders have stayed at the palace at difficult times in their careers, but have not made such demands. The deteriorating relationship between the palace and the president's security men," continues the newspaper, "has infuriated the Queen. When it is all over, a mighty row with the Prime Minister is in the cards." Ooh. "The Queen is annoyed to be the one having to turn down so many of the White House's requests," said a Buckingham Palace official. "The Prime Minister's attitude is that this is something that should be resolved between the palace and the White House. But the fact is, the Queen is being left to negotiate a political minefield pretty much on her own. Officially, the invitation was made to the president," continues this source, "in her name. But, of course, ultimately, this came from Tony Blair. Now that it is looking as if the visit is not going to be a cakewalk, Blair is, predictably, trying to distance himself from the whole thing." Unquote. An official at the palace. This made the Philadelphia Inquirer this week. I don't know if you saw it. A new top secret CIA report from Iraq warns that growing numbers of Iraqis are concluding the U.S.-led coalition could be defeated and are supporting the insurgents. The report paints a bleak picture of the political and security situation in Iraq, cautions that the U.S.-led drive to rebuild the country as a democracy could collapse unless corrective actions are taken immediately. Well, that's not too panicky. And L. Paul Bremer, who was flown in for a rapid round of talks at the White House this week and then flew back to Iraq, essentially endorsed the CIA's findings, according to a senior administration official. The report's bleak tone and Bremer's private endorsement differ sharply with the upbeat public assessments that the Bush administration are giving as part of their aggressive publicity campaign. I guess that made it it made it into some questions on the Sunday Yak Show, so I guess that got through the bubble a little bit. This hasn't yet, from a liberal British newspaper. British warnings that America was failing before the war to prepare properly for a crumbling security situation in Iraq after the ouster of Saddam Hussein. Those warnings were ignored by Vice President Dick Cheney in the Pentagon. In some of the first direct evidence of serious divisions between the key allies in the run-up to the conflict, the former British ambassador to Washington, Sir Christopher Meyer, said the U.S. had failed to focus on what might happen after Saddam was overthrown. I thought we kind of knew that was going to happen. His admission raises serious questions that a lack of planning by U.S. forces is at least partially to blame for Iraq's present security problems. In an interview with The Observer, liberal British newspaper, Meyer, who was ambassador just before the war began, said there were a series of meetings between British and American officials between last November and the start of the war in March. The British regularly raised their concerns about how much planning was going on to secure the country after Saddam, but the issue, he says, was largely ignored. One of the things that did not work out between us was a properly agreed strategy, Meyer said. I suspect that a lot of things we were saying to the Americans when we had a number of meetings toward the end of last year on post-Saddam strategy, a lot of those things have now been shown to be right. Asked if the government had warned the U.S. about the need for planning the post-Saddam era, he said, absolutely, absolutely. He added, the problem was that bureaucratically there's a tendency in Washington to be able to focus on only one big issue at a time. I think they were consumed in the contingency planning for war. We were saying that's fine, but we must be clear in our own mind what is happening afterwards. That was absolutely indispensable. The message was well taken in the State Department, but it could not agree on an approach with the Defense Department and the vice president. He also revealed Tony Blair had made a personal appeal to Bush at the start of this year to delay the war. At their Washington summit in January, Bush had made it clear America was ready to attack in February, well before all the diplomatic avenues had been exhausted and before Britain felt that its military capability was ready. I remember sending something to London on the eve of that meeting saying neither argument had won in Washington. Tony Blair is going to have to come to Washington and argue for support of the second UN resolution and argue for some delay, which, of course, he didn't get, unless he was arguing for time delay. You could always get that in Washington. The CIA's search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq has found no evidence that former President Saddam Hussein tried to transfer chemical or biological technology or weapons to terrorists, according to a military intelligence expert. This is in the Washington Post. Anthony Cordesman, a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, provided new details about the weapons search and Iraqi insurgency in a report released Friday. It was based on briefings over the past 2 weeks in Iraq from David Kaye. You know him. He's the guy running the search for weapons of mass destruction, as well as L. Paul Bremer and military officials. No evidence of any Iraqi effort to transfer weapons of mass destruction or weapons to terrorists, he wrote of Kaye's briefing. This is despite that report, that memo leaked by Douglas Feith that I mentioned at the top of the broadcast. He defended the administration's pre-war position. The idea that we didn't have specific proof he was planning to give a biological agent to a terrorist group, Feith wrote, doesn't really lead you to anything, because you wouldn't expect to have that information, even if it were true. Run that around your mind a little bit. You wouldn't expect to have that information even if it were true, ladies and gentlemen. And finally from Britain, President George, now you know that there's been a lot of yak in this country about the president's failure, refusal, however you want to describe it, to attend funerals of Americans killed in the war, or even to allow reportage of the arrival of their remains at Dover, at the base in Dover where they all arrived. But he is planning to meet with relatives of some families, families of some British military killed in Iraq. That plan has now been criticized by some of the families. One British father said the American president was making the offer only for his own benefit, while another said he did not know how he, quote, had the nerve to show his face, unquote, after triggering a war that cost more than 50 British lives. Samantha Roberts, the widow of Sergeant Stephen Roberts, the first British soldier to die in the conflict, said she would ask Mr. Bush tough questions if they met. I would ask if shock and awe was an absolute necessity, she said. I also would ask him to consider not to pull troops out. We need them there for at least 6 months. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. There's a growing tumult in this country about the advent of electronic voting. Now, the end of the 2000 elections, everybody was yakking about, hey, we got to fix the voting system because of Florida. Chads, ladies and gentlemen. So what comes forth as a proposed replacement is touchscreen voting. Hey, it's computerized. It's got to be good. Some of us, including, as I recall, the host of this program, were saying, hey, what's the matter with a paper ballot and a thing to mark the paper ballot? And then you got a paper ballot and you count the paper ballot, and if there's any question about it, you got a paper ballot you can go back to and say, right here, it's on paper. Look, right here. Instead, they have a paperless electronic voting system, and now, as you may be aware, the internet is rife with all sorts of talk about the possible security holes in those electronic voting systems, which might allow tampering, hacking, rigging. And the companies involved are responding, as you might expect, by threatening lawsuits against the critics. Anyway, this is from the Indianapolis Star. Boone County, Indiana officials are searching for an answer to the computer glitch that spewed out impossible numbers and interrupted an otherwise uneventful election process this past week. I about had a heart attack, County Clerk Lisa Garofalo said of the breakdown that came as an eager crowd watched computer-generated vote totals being projected onto a wall of the county courthouse rotunda. I'm assuming, she said, the glitch was in the software. A lengthy collaboration between the county's information technology director and advisors from the Microvote software company fixed the problem. But before that, computer readings of stored voting machine data showed far more votes than registered voters. Believe me, says Garofalo, the county clerk, there was nobody more shook up than I was, unquote. So why are we racing to electronic voting? Who is it exactly that wants, well, the premise, of course, is that counting the paper ballots is so slow. So who is it exactly that needs the results fast? I, for one, will sign up to be first among the ranks of voters to say, hey, you know what, I'll wait until Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, if need be, to get an accurate count. How about you? And finally, at the top of this week's news, you may remember a few years back, there was some talk in the first Bush administration about the then Secretary of State, James Baker, and the then popular, I don't remember which medication it was, but it was then popular kind of sleeping medication that he admitted to taking to deal with all the flights. Man, I hear that. So now, this week, Secretary Powell gives an interview with Abdul Rahman al-Rashid, a reporter for a London-based Saudi newspaper. Al-Rashid asks, so, do you use sleeping tablets to organize yourself? Good question. Powell, yes, well, I wouldn't call them that. They're a wonderful medication. Not medication. How would you call it? They're called Ambien, which is very good. You don't use Ambien? Everybody here uses Ambien, unquote, Colin Powell. FYI, Ambien may cause special type of memory loss known as amnesia. When this occurs, a person may not remember what has happened for several hours after taking the medication. In addition, addiction or dependence can be caused by Ambien, especially when used regularly for longer than a few weeks or at high doses. People who've been dependent on alcohol or other drugs in the past may have a greater chance of becoming addicted to Ambien. Some people using Ambien have experienced unusual changes in their thinking and or behaviors. This is your Secretary of State on drugs. Would you call him that?
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school.
I can't complain.
The teachers that taught me weren't cool.
I can't complain.
They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. I've got to admit, it's getting better,
better,
a little better, all the time.
I can't get no
I have to admit, it's getting better.
Tom Brokaw. All this week on NBC Nightly News, Dateline NBC, The Today Show, MSNBC, and MSNBC.com. If JFK had lived, a major investor drama by NBC News and the editors of Us Weekly.
Sinatra was a nutty guy when he went over to Reagan. I called him up. I said, Frank, what's with the Reagan bit? He said, Johnny Fitz, that's what he called me. He's the only person who called me that. He said, if he's good enough for Jimmy Hoffa Jr., he's good enough for me.
If JFK had lived, a compelling memoir of something that never happened.
I think John was my favorite Beatle. He was smart. He was a borderline depressive. And he had the best hair.
Four nights, 5 days, 6 channels. If JFK had lived.
I saw Khrushchev just before he died. You know what he said? He said, Kennedy, on that Cuba deal, you were such a putz.
If JFK had lived. All this week from NBC News, America's news leader.
I get down 'cause nothing will You say this too shall pass. Good times come after the bad. The best yet to be had.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A German parliamentarian has apologized for remarks that appeared to compare Jews during the Bolshevik Revolution to Nazis in World War II. Conservative Martin Hohmann had said many Jews were active in execution squads during the Russian Revolution. Bowing to intense pressure, he's now said he did not intend to, quote, deny the uniqueness of the Holocaust. It was not my intention to characterize the Jews as a nation of perpetrators. If a different impression has arisen, I emphatically apologize and am sorry if I have hurt feelings, he said. New York Mets scout Bill Singer started an ugly, racially charged barroom scene at the general manager meetings at the Arizona Biltmore Hotel, placing his job in jeopardy and prompting an apology from the Mets. Singer made racially insensitive remarks to Dodger assistant general manager Kim Ng at a hotel bar about 11:30 p.m. Tuesday night. Word of the incident spread rapidly among baseball general managers. I'm embarrassed by what I said when I met with Ng. On Tuesday evening, Singer said in a statement released by the Mets, "My comments were truly inappropriate, and I'm truly sorry. I've apologized to her and hope she will forgive me." Executives from several teams had retreated to the hotel bar that evening, according to people with knowledge of what happened. An apparently drunken Singer approached Ng and belligerently asked, "What are you doing here?" "I'm working," she replied. "What are you doing here?" he repeated. "I'm the assistant general manager of the Dodgers." "Where are you from?" Singer asked. "I'm from Indiana," Ng said, referring to her birthplace. "No, where are you from?" Singer asked. "My family is originally from China," Ng said. Singer then allegedly started speaking gibberish, making fun of Chinese. He has apologized. The student who asked the most ridiculed question at CNN's Rock the Vote debate last week, Macs or PCs, says it wasn't her idea. Alexandra Trustman says a CNN producer called her on the morning of the Boston Forum and suggested she ask about Democratic presidential candidates' computer preferences. Puzzled by the request, she says, she drafted a more complicated question about how the candidates would use technology. But in Boston, Trustman said she was handed a note card with the digital age equivalent of the boxers or briefs choice put to Bill Clinton on MTV. She wrote that she told the producer, "I didn't see the question's relevance," but he rejected her proposed query because it wasn't lighthearted enough. She was informed the network thought it would be a good opportunity for the candidates to relate to a younger audience. CNN spokesman Matthew Furman now says in an attempt to encourage a lighthearted moment in this debate, a CNN producer working with Ms. Trustman clearly went too far. CNN regrets the producer's actions. The producer drank the Kool-Aid as well. The chief of Massachusetts Infectious Disease Laboratory apologized to colleagues for any embarrassment or discomfort he might have caused by representing himself as holding a doctorate when the degree was actually bestowed by an online university that requires no dissertation and that grants diplomas in 72 hours for $499. Dateline Orem, Utah, Burger King has served up a plain apology to a woman who said she was ordered by a franchise employee to stop breastfeeding her baby in the fast food dining room or leave. Kate Geary said she was made to feel like a criminal for breastfeeding her baby girl and asked the burger chain for an apology. Burger King issued a generic apology in a prepared release Tuesday, but it was a flash broiled release, so it tasted better than otherwise prepared. Burger King Corporation and our franchisee apologize for any inconvenience any of our guests experienced at our restaurant on November 10th, 2003, the release said. The company said its employee was simply responding to the request of another customer who was uncomfortable with Geary breastfeeding at the eatery. Yeah, it can bring you down seeing somebody eating better than you at a Burger King. Sir Bob Geldof turned the air blue by using the F word on a children's TV show in England yesterday. Host Kat Deely had to apologize for the rocker's outburst on lunchtime music show CDUK. Geldof had been asked to give his opinion on three new music videos. When Kat said there was not time to run the third, he said, "Oh, do it anyway, F the tape." Kat said, "We can't use that kind of language at this time of the day, and you were doing so well there, Bob." The federal government apologized to College Station, Texas officials late this week for a major error in a news release that unfairly criticized the city's emergency response to the Texas A&M bonfire collapse in 1999. The agency mistakenly asserted the rescue efforts after the collapse lacked a centralized command system, resulting in a lack of coordination. FEMA officials admitted late in the week that the release was wrong and issued an apology. Yeah, somebody in Washington criticizing somebody else for having lack of centralized planning. Mr. Pot, meet Mr. Kettle. Carol Burnett got a public apology after a tribute to her was left out of CBS's 75th anniversary special. "I am sorry that during the excitement of a live three-hour television event, the wonderful film piece we prepared that paid tribute to the Carol Burnett Show was not aired," says executive producer Gil Cates in an open letter addressed to Dear Carol and published in the trades. Cates noted that Burnett received a glorious standing ovation from the audience in the New York ballroom where the show was held. "Sometimes," he said, "goofs happen. We all feel bad about that. I promise it won't happen on the 100th. Dateline Concord, Mass. John F. Kerry, presidential candidate, called three former aides to apologize for saying his campaign for the presidential nomination will be better off without them. The Massachusetts senator made the calls hours after he said in an interview that the firing of campaign manager Jim Jordan on Sunday proved his ability to make tough decisions. Within days of Jordan's dismissal, Kerry's press secretary and deputy finance director quit. When you change one person, it's not at all unusual that a couple of people that person hired, that I barely know, who are not really involved with me, decide to go, Kerry said. Nice. And finally, making his apology tour, the president of Serbia and Montenegro has apologized in Sarajevo for evil committed during the war in Bosnia. Svetozar Marovic said he apologized for every evil act or misfortune that anyone in Bosnia-Herzegovina was exposed to because of Serbia-Montenegro. He said it was up to the politicians in power to create an atmosphere of forgiveness. Both sides must be brave, and we must help each other to heal these wounds. He added he hoped his apology would improve relations between the two countries. He exchanged apologies with his Croatian counterpart earlier this year. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature, as you know, of this broadcast. So President Bush is making this trip to London, the first formal state visit during the reign of Queen Elizabeth. Ronald Reagan didn't get this. George Bush didn't get this. They were considering extending an invitation to Bill Clinton and then pulled it back after he had his little thing. This invitation was extended in 2001. Things change. And there might be a phone call on the eve of the visit, don't you think?
I got a bar. You just get back to the turkey recipe. Yellow. Hey, 4-1. Just a little pre-trip check-in. Next stop, England, eh? 43? Yep. Well, you know what they say. Yeah, that it swings like a pendulum does. Yeah, there's that. But also, nobody fights like best friends. So, you know, this time, don't be expecting a cakewalk. Hey, sir, you know, everybody I depend on for objective, unfiltered information. You know, Condi, Rummy, Dick Cheney, everybody says it's going to be an old-fashioned love fest. You know, the Blair Bear's got to love bomb me because at this point in the procedures, where's he going to go? So, you know, we got his proxy.
Sound pretty sure of yourself there.
Let me just say, I've seen Tony Blair's soul during prayer meetings. This is a man who wasn't put on this earth to cut and run.
No, neither were you, but...
Oh, hey, 41, we're not cutting and running.
Well, turning things over to the Iraqis, ready or not, by next June, isn't that the overture to a withdrawal? Not that either of us knows that much about overtures per se, but...
Now, we may be running, but we are definitely not cutting. You know, when the time comes, when the season turns, our dollars will represent us even better than our troops have. So we'll still have a role to play in the new Iraq, even under Plan A.1.
A.1?
Yeah, Dick Cheney says it's a sign of weakness to have a Plan B.
All right, so no tension with Blair.
Worst case scenery, he'll want us to do, extreme waffle on WMDs. Carl thinks that's a no-brainiac. We issue it on the day after Thanksgiving. Nobody here notices it and makes a big splash in Britain. Ended story.
Lost in leftover turkey recipes and bowl game speculation over here.
Yeah, you got that right.
Still that little matter of widespread protests in the streets of our closest ally.
Yeah.
Little spot of bother, that.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, it's the way the British say that could be a pain in the royal hiney. Should be in your briefing book, under words and phrases.
You know, 4-1, I'm surprised at you.
Well,
you know, if you're getting the same objective, unfiltered information I am, you know, this protest stuff, it's just a lot of hype cooked up by our friends in the liberal media to distract Americans from the good news
that I'm having tea with the Queen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been thinking about it. One day I'm sucking Jack Daniels off a frozen trailer hitch. 10 years later, I'm having tea with the freaking Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the same kind of transformation the Iraqis are going to experience if we play with our cards right.
Okay, so you got half the special forces on deployment in Liverpool just to deal with the hype. But still, concerned about you. We both are.
Yeah, well, but that's your job. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, you know. I'm a father as well as a leader, too. But, 41, you're not really worried.
Scout's honor?
Yeah.
A little bit. Wish you were going someplace just a little calmer.
Yeah.
You know, upstate New York, the Intermountain West. And Brits have a fiery side.
We talking about the tea bags? Shoot, if that's all I have to worry about is the fiery Brits. Hey, bring them on.
Okay, just saying.
What? Saying what?
Saying I remember Nixon in Venezuela.
Well, so do I. I mean, I don't remember it parquet, but that's when he did the Macarena.
Yeah, it was Al Gore, and that was Miami.
Okay, but the basic thrust of that idea is cohesion.
Look, Nixon went to Venezuela and got stoned.
Well, there's my point. And then by the time he's elected president, he's straighter than a 700 club tongue depressor.
Yeah. Sure, it's all under some kind of control.
So. Oh, you bet. John Ashcroft is all over this operation. I'll tell you, Bin Laden is in London this week. He's one dead hombre.
And sort of remember telling you that the World Trade Org was going to ding your subsidies for the steel business. See, Sprout, try to keep reminding you, if you can run the world, there's no need to square off against it.
Hey, 43, you know, it's like Dick Cheney says.
Mm.
If you've had four heart attacks, you don't have time to wait for the French and the Russians to get the point.
You haven't had four heart attacks.
No, but there's still time.
Okay, well, have a good visit. Enjoy your tea.
I mean, I was sucking Jack Daniels off a frozen trailer hitch.
Mar sends her love.
Oh, me too. Right back. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Huh?
Words and phrases.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
For someone exactly just like you. Why should we spend money on a show or two? There's no one does those love scenes exactly like you. You make me feel so grand, I wanna hand the world to you. You seem to understand each foolish little dream I'm dreaming, scheme I'm scheming. Now I know why my mama taught me to be true. She meant me for someone exactly like you. Thank you.
night for someone exactly like you. Why should we spend money on a show or two? There's no one does those love scenes, baby, exactly like you. You make me feel so great. I wanna hand the world to you. You seem to understand. Each foolish little dream I'm dreaming, scheme I'm scheming. Now I know why mama taught me to be true. She meant me for someone. Exactly, just like you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio, and around the world on the Le Show World Service at two different locations on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Rush Limbaugh being straight when he gets back on the air, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Playlists for this broadcast are usually available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.